one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Heavenly Father, let us extend our thoughts in union as we work to enrich the lives of our residents. Let our deliberations be free of rancor and filled with the concern of others rather than ourselves. Let us plan beyond the obvious that we might protect our neighbor from the unintended consequences of the shallow thought. Let us remember that we are the people's servant, not they ours. Let us proceed in peace. Amen.
All right, thank you, everybody. Let's call the Kendall County board meeting adjourned September meeting to order. It is Tuesday, November 17th, 9 a.m. Can I get a roll call, please?
I can't hear the roll call.
I can't either.
Speak directly into it. Yeah, we still can't hear her.
Can you hear me okay on the phone?
Yes.
Okay.
Here, Debbie.
Ms. Hendricks?
Here, but I can barely hear you.
She's not picking up on the mic. I can't hear her over here. One second.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Here.
Ms. Vickers?
Here.
Ms. Flowers?
Present.
Mr. Gangler?
Here.
Mr. Giles? Mr. Greider?
Here.
Okay, we have a quorum. May I get a motion to approve the agenda?
Moved.
Motion by Greider, seconded by Flowers. Roll call, please.
Ms. Sussich?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Thank you. Any special recognition, Mr. Keppel? Nothing? Okay. Any public comment? Anything in person or on the phone? Seeing none, may I get a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved, Hendricks.
Motion by Kellogg, seconded by Hendricks. Roll call, please.
Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Jessica?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
All eyes, thank you. Any old business? Seeing none. New business, elected official reports. Sheriff, I see you here today.
Morning.
Good morning.
I'm just here to answer any questions if anybody had anything about the recent activity in Boulder Hill and our shooting. Otherwise, I publicly wanted to thank Eric Weiss and his office for their prompt response to get us legal opinion on a lot of things. Those things unfold rather quickly, and it's very nice to have his staff on hand to take our calls, so we really appreciate that.
Okay.
And I believe Eric was actually contacted directly on some of that, so it was just...
Ms. Hendricks has a question for you.
Yes, Audra.
Hi. I understand that just from the press that this was a gang-related shooting, and I'm curious to know what the status of that problem is over in Boulder Hill.
The status of the gang?
Gang problem.
Well, gangs are pretty much everywhere, but it's no different than it's been. There's been, you'll see a flare-up in violence because of a particular activity. Normally, we'll see that when something happens up north in Aurora. It'll trickle down hear sometimes based on who's involved. Our criminal intelligence team, which is our gang unit, basically, they also came out to assist. They're always active. In fact, they're one of the big reasons that this we had the offenders detained within a two-hour time period of when the event occurred. So other than that, I mean, we're constantly looking at it. We're constantly gathering intelligence. Again, a two-hour turnaround for the detaining of two individuals that were involved in a homicide is some pretty good police work.
Yes, I did notice that, and it was excellent. What advice would you have for people in Boulder Hill or the surrounding area in terms of noticing, recognizing, and reporting gang activity?
If anybody sees what they believe to be gang activity, often that would also be drug activity, please give us a call. We can respond to that. Like I said, we also have a four-person team that is specifically assigned for gang activity and gathering gang intelligence. And we did know that there was an uptick in the gang violence up north. That's why the gang unit did have their intelligence. They were up to date on it, and they were able to pass that information along. But specifically, if citizens see something and they don't think it's right, they can report that activity to us. Also, we do provide gang talks, gang education talks. We've done those quite frequently. The last one we did was, I believe, early October for a group, and we still offer those anytime that people would like to become more aware of gang intelligence and what to look for.
And, of course, we would never want anyone from the public to intervene on their own, but what kind of information would be helpful for you in your investigations?
Any activity that they see, descriptions, car, license plates, if they know their name, obviously don't approach. But if you observe something, take notes. Everybody usually has a smartphone. They could take pictures. And then they can forward that information to us to help corroborate their story or what their concern is. They could give us that information.
And then I just want to make one final point. How important and how helpful is it for the public to provide you with information in terms of combating this problem and preventing it from becoming worse?
Well, it's extremely important. It always has been. Sometimes there is reluctancy to report activity because of repercussions. However, they can remain anonymous. There's always the Crime Stoppers as well, that they could go through Crime Stoppers, but they can email us. There's a lot of different ways that they could get that information to us.
Thank you. Nothing further.
Okay. Ms. Flowers?
I was just going to ask, was this a drug-related activity, or was there other crime involved with this shooting, or was it just a dispute?
The intelligence we have so far is this is just a dispute going on. It's been going on for a while. One of the individuals we have in custody was based on other intelligence information from other police agencies that he was involved in two prior shootings, either being shot at or shooting at someone else, unable to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. But in the last 3 weeks to 4 weeks, he was involved in two prior shootings before this one. So it's an ongoing dispute. And like I said, he's now in custody in our jail, and we hope with the recovered firearms that we're able to solve some other shootings in other jurisdictions, but in this regional area.
Okay. Thank you.
And I would like to add, this is the first time that we've seen this type of shooting involving an assault rifle. It's traditionally been a handgun.
So is there any other specific details that you can release about that incident?
Really not other than that. I would like to commend the neighbors in that area that were helping us out and giving us a lot of their camera feed, still photos that helped us get that first still photo and get it out in a timely period. And it's that information that we, if we can get that information and get it out, the technology can really help us do our job quickly. And this is an example of where the technology was able to help us apprehend these subjects quickly. And we can't always rely on a Ring doorbell or a camera on someone's house, but I know we are discussing license plate readers through KenCom, and that is a way that we could get that information based on. We had a lot of eyewitnesses. Most of our shootings have been occurring during daylight hours. In fact, a couple of police chiefs and I were talking that 15, 20 years ago, most of your shootings were occurring in the evening, or in the darkness. And these shootings where two Oswego police officers witnessed 3 years ago right up on Weisbrook as they were shuttling squad cars back and forth. That was like 12:30, you know, in the day. And this one was 11:05 in the morning. So it just doesn't happen at night. But, you know, everybody could tell us it was a dark SUV, black in color, but nobody knew the make. And nobody had the license plate, but it's technology that really helped us solve this with the residents up there. You know, a lot of people saw it because they were home, they were out, but nobody could give us a license plate. And but the uniqueness of the car was really what helped us out, and the still photo.
Interesting. Thank you, Sheriff. Anybody else? Okay. Oh, I'm sorry, Robin.
That's all right. I, as someone who lives not far from that neighborhood, I want to give my thanks to you and the entire office for the quick response. I've heard from a lot of residents, and I know that they're very happy that how fast the response time was and how quickly you apprehended the guys. So I wanted to make sure you knew that people are talking and appreciating the work that you did.
Thank you. It really was the team and a lot of regional departments. We work together. That's what we've developed over the years. That's how we support one another. That is very kind of them to say, and I will pass that on to those who are involved more. So thank you.
And I also want to say, I attend regular Boulder Hill Neighborhood Watch meetings, and there's always someone from the sheriff's office there updating on activity in the neighborhood. And the crime has gone down in the neighborhood. I think it gets a bad rap sometimes. Obviously, there's violence there. But as the sheriff said, there's violence everywhere and gang activity everywhere. And the neighbors have really come together and are trying to make a difference. So I hate to have one bad thing spoil people's opinions of an entire neighborhood that is 95%, you know, just good, hardworking families. So I just wanted to add that. Thank you.
Thank you, Robin. Mr. Kellogg?
That neighborhood watch meeting is tonight at 7 o'clock, and they're doing it virtual if anybody's interested. And also expanding into the Route 31 side, do you know anything about that with the expanding the neighborhood watch to include the group over by the marina? That area?
I know there's been some people that have been talking about it. I plan on attending the meeting tonight via Zoom in case anyone has any questions. But I have heard that as well.
All right. Thank you.
Robin, do you have something else? Your hand is still up.
Oh, sorry. I didn't put it down.
No, that's okay. Just wanted to make sure.
I'm hosting it on my Zoom, so if anybody else is interested, just let me know and I'll send you the link.
Okay. Thank you. Sheriff, how's our app coming with the Sheriff's Department?
Well, we hope to have it up and running by January 1st, but they're in the developmental stages
of that
right now.
So with this app, is this this specific incident is something that would be really helpful when we have this app? You know, like people call in and let us know? Or, I mean, how does that work with the app?
Yes, they're developing crime tips and stuff like that now with that app, but it will allow us to push the information out through the app. And then people that maybe are not on Facebook or social media during the day, but they can get an alert on their phone so they can know what occurred. And a lot of times what we're hoping is when we push those alerts out that we had a specific area, something went on, if somebody did have that app on their phone and they were at work, it may allow them to check their cameras or Ring doorbells while they're at work, and then that could get us that information to us quicker, and then we could it could help us develop a lead quicker. It was nice that the people were home, and they're in. I would echo Member Vickers' comments about the people in the neighborhoods in Boulder Hill. They are very helpful, very kind, and it's really a nice partnership that we have with them. So,
great, thank you so much. All right, County Clerk and Recorder.
My revenue report is in the packet. We will be running our final tabulation today for any ballots that were received election day and processed by the vote-by-mail judges for the last 14 days. We will do that at 3 o'clock and hope to have those on the website by the end of the day today.
Do we have a percentage of our voter turnout yet?
I believe it was around 73%.
73%. Do we remember what it was in 2016?
We don't.
Okay. Any questions for Debbie? All right, Treasurer. Clerk of the Court. State's Attorney. Coroner, Jackie, I see you. Good morning.
My report is in the packet. just a real quick overview. We had 25 deaths over the month of October, and that gives us to date 353 deaths. But if you look at where we were at this time last year, we had 281 deaths. So our death count is definitely going up. We had a drug overdose and a suicide during the month of October as well. And you know, if I may, I know we're in the middle of a pandemic, but we can't really forget about the epidemic that we also have as far as our drug overdoses, our opioids deaths that we still have to not forget about those individuals in our communities and whatnot. And if you'll see, fiscal year to date, accidental deaths are 16. And out of those 16, 12 to date have been overdoses. And at the same time last year, 4 of those deaths were overdoses. So it has increased quite a bit. So I don't want us to lose sight of those also important deaths and whatnot. That being said, referencing our pandemic, there are some things that I've heard about that I think are important to touch on. I hear people saying that to date we've had 6 people within the proverbial walls of Kendall County who have died from COVID, and those have been in their 80s and 90s and in facilities. And so I think people tend to dismiss the importance of it because of the fact that these are older people or they're in a nursing home or whatever. And I think that it's important to recognize that those are the people who have not traveled outside the county, because people are traveling to hospitals from our county and they're dying. And those numbers are being tabulated outside of our county, because people are going to DeKalb hospitals or Kane County hospitals or into Edwards or CDH and whatnot in those areas, and they're just overrun right now with numbers. Copley has equal number of patients as staff out with COVID, and so it's just all of the hospitals. I just got off the phone on my way here with a nurse from a hospital in DeKalb, and they said they're begging for the nurse from company nurses that travel around. They're not staff in their hospital, but they're looking and trying to get staff because they have so much staff out. And I see where people are saying, oh, I don't want to wear my mask because masks don't really work, or the masks, they go back to the math of it. Oh, the the virus itself is only so many microns and it can't fit through the mask, or it'll fit through the mask and it doesn't really help. But the thing is COVID isn't going to just crawl out of your mouth. It has to piggyback on a droplet, and your mask will stop or prevent a lot of the droplet transmission and whatnot. And so I think that's important for people to realize that it's, you're not stopping the COVID by itself. You're stopping those droplets. That is the form of the transmission. And I think people need to realize that the masks aren't going to completely eliminate your chance of getting it or to spread it, but it definitely reduces your chance of getting it or spreading it. And it's definitely here in our communities, and it's definitely here in our hospitals. So I hope that maybe that clears up some of the questions or some of the back and forth that people have had about it.
Thank you, Jackie. I appreciate it. Ms. Hendricks?
I'm very happy to hear our coroner speak on that issue, and I saw a demonstration just yesterday, actually. I can't remember what the science this guy specializes in because it's got like 12 syllables, but basically it was a really good way of demonstrating this, especially to younger people, about how this travels. So on a cold morning, since we're starting to have those, if you go outside and breathe out, when you can see your breath, that's the droplets, the moisture that Coroner Purcell is speaking of. And if you put a mask on and it's a good mask, you should see that getting cut down quite a bit. So I would encourage everybody to educate themselves quite thoroughly on proper mask wearing, because that includes it going over your nose at all times, and what kinds of masks to get. We're looking for a minimum of a 3-ply, 3 layers if it's cloth. But this is really important, and I know that I've been beating this drum for 7 months, but we are now in the thick of it. And regardless of whether or not you think you're in a risk group, once again, it's not about you. It's about the other people who are, or the other people who have to go into nursing homes to take care of older people, or medical staff that needs to remain healthy. And if we are going to protect our healthcare system, everybody properly wearing a mask everywhere they go is critically, critically important. And I, as you all know, have lost my election, but I'm not going to stop beating this drum, because it's the lives of the people around you, and it's our local economy. Please, everyone, properly wear a mask.
Thank you, Audra. Ms. Flowers?
We had touched on this, you know, when all of this coronavirus started, and that is, when you are testing positive or you think you might have it, take precautions when you're throwing things away, even. Garbage, your garbage goes into, you know, the people who are handling your garbage, that kind of stuff too. So, I mean, be very, very careful with even things that you're throwing away if you're testing positive too. So there are some precautions that you need to take there as well. So people need to really be careful. And wear glasses too. I mean, that's another precautionary thing that you can take, because that's another barrier against some of the things that are coming at you. So that's just my piece, going along with Audra.
Thank you, Ms. Flowers. Anyone else? Audra?
Yeah, I think I want to add one more thing, and this one is critically important. It used to be that back in the day, if you felt sick, you stayed home, and that's because that came out of the eras when we didn't have modern medicine like we have today, and when a time when people literally died of the flu kind of regularly. And so this whole idea of hygiene around disease was much more strenuous. When people got sick, you isolated them in a bedroom of your home, you didn't let them wander around your house, and you certainly did not go out in public. And I would expect that certainly the adults in this county understand the idea of, please don't go to work sick, don't send a child to school sick, don't go out in public when you're sick. If you are feeling ill, whether or not you've had your COVID test yet or not, and or you're waiting for the results, you need to isolate yourself and not be out in public. That's just like playing Russian roulette with people, and it's not okay. If you want to risk your own health, that's one thing, but this is an issue of risking other people's health. So please, when you're feeling sick, stay home, get a test.
Thank you, Ms. Hendricks. Anyone else? Jackie, do you have something else?
I just wanted to add on kind of what she was saying, though. You know, we have a facility here in Kendall County that had done an excellent job with their mitigation efforts. They had zero for the last 9 months, zero cases. And then they started to kind of relax and let people in and whatnot. And a single family member who had no symptoms at the time, but the next day her husband started having symptoms and then got tested and then she started having symptoms and then they kind of went back and said, And within the last 2 weeks now, that same facility that for the past 9 months have had zero cases now has 19 cases between staff and residents who live there. So it doesn't take much at all to get, you know, it just goes like wildfire when it gets into a place. So, while I appreciate her saying, you know, if you have symptoms and whatnot, but a lot, and they had no symptoms, you know what I mean? They just, you're still contagious for that 48 hours or so before you ever even start to show symptoms. So you have to kind of keep that guard up and stay conscientious about it because, you know, while we do have 80s and 90-year-olds who are dying from it here within the county, to just die peacefully in their sleep like you would hope at 80 and 90 years old. You know, they're literally struggling till they die. So it's definitely here. It's definitely in our community, and it's definitely going to be here for a few weeks. The hospitals are everywhere overrun, and I'm afraid. I think some of our numbers are the fact that people people are afraid to go to the hospital for their other illnesses and whatnot. And, you know, people still need to be able to go without COVID symptoms to the hospital and whatnot and be able to receive treatment and whatnot. And I think that they're either staying home because they're afraid to go or they don't think that it's appropriate to go. And then they're dying at home a lot and from things that they probably could have gotten treatment for earlier. So I just think it's good to keep in the forefront for right now for the next few weeks. It's gonna be rough for a few weeks. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. Health Department, I know we have Rayanne on the line. Rayanne?
Yeah, good morning. Thank you, Jackie, for everything that you have just said, as well as Audra and Member Flowers. Yep, it's not going away. We still see the numbers as of yesterday. We had 4,540 in our county. That is 166 in new cases yesterday. We have 2,460 in recovery, and now we are at 33 deaths. So we know that it is still here. Our region 2 is at 70% positivity rate. Kendall County, as of yesterday, was at 20.3% positivity rate. And even IDPH is, you know, sending out information about the importance of really staying home as much as possible and leaving only for necessary and essential activities, buying groceries, visiting the pharmacy. Those would be the reasons to go out. But if we go back to where we were in March and April and how we really just stayed home and only went out when necessary. And again, it's about sending one person to the grocery store one time a week if needed and not the everyday running back and forth to the grocery stores. And again, it's about the hygiene. So I think, you know, everybody kind of said a lot about this, covered it, and I appreciate all the support in this.
Rayanne, when we went into the stay-at-home order back in spring, I think it was closer to May. It feels like a million years ago, quite frankly. But do you remember what our positivity rate was back then for that lockdown status?
You know, I don't know if they were keeping positivity rate at that point.
So we didn't even know.
I don't know if there was enough data on it.
Well, and the reason why I ask is because someone said this is worse than where we were back when we locked down. And so I wanted to, you know, sort of get at the heart of that. Like, how do we know? Do we know by cases, you know, presented? Did we keep the positivity rate? That type of thing. So I was kind of curious, when you start hearing we're worse, is that just rhetoric or is that actual fact? So I, you know, was wanting to get your take on that.
Yeah, when I look back, so every day I have like my little journal that has all the numbers every single day. And when I look back into May and April and May, you know, it was, we were 8 people a day. We were 14 people a day, 3 people. You know, it was odd for us to have 25. That was in July. We had a 25 people in one day test positive. You know, here these last couple weeks, and we know testing has increased, but testing increases also speak to the amount of spread that's out there. So now we're at, you know, let me look here where exactly we're at this year last week. You know, 176, 70, 52, 269, 112, 98, 166 yesterday. So yes, you can tell that our positivity rate is a lot greater, and our testing is up as well.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Hendricks?
Hi, Rayanne. Can you speak to what the biggest vector of contagion is? And this is why I'm bringing it up. In the last couple of days, I've had the opportunity to talk to people who are really going, jumping through a lot of hoops to try to have a family gathering. And then I've kind of had to point out to them, this is precisely what we're asking people not to do. And you can see the light bulb go off on people's heads. They're like, oh my God, they're like in the middle of it, not realizing that they are in fact engaging in the very thing that we're asking people not to do. Can you explain, just for the public and for the press here, to have it on the record, why it is we're asking people to not have their students come home from college and to not have a family gathering this year for the holidays, for example?
Yeah, anytime you're bringing anybody from the outdoors indoors, so you're mixing family members, you have a higher risk, of course, because you can't track where everybody has been that hasn't been in your own home. So it's just enough to keep track of those that are in your home, and that's why they're saying to really minimize any family gatherings of mixed families, just to ensure that we're staying safe within our own homes. And also the college students, you know, coming home, as heartbreaking as it is, you know, it's about keeping everybody safe. And, you know, we need to keep them back at school, and they need to stay there where they're, where they know what their exposure rate is, and not bring that into the family where there might be somebody with any kind of, you know, immune compromised systems or anything like that. So, yep. Anytime you're mixing families, you're increasing your higher risk. And that doesn't matter if you're, you know, it's even about riding in the cars. You know, take separate cars if you're, you know, don't mix sitting in a car with somebody else that you don't know, because that is the exposure rate right there. It's just really getting back to the basics of staying within your own household.
Thank you. Ms. Flowers?
I was wondering if you had any advice on people who are traveling, if there's any, you know, like quarantine period, like if you're traveling from state to state, should people be, you know, isolating for, you know, like if you're going to Wisconsin, should you like stay isolated for a couple weeks when you come back to Illinois, or if you're going to another, you know, another state, should you, I mean, is there any advice that you have there?
I think that, you know, right now, any traveling to any areas that are experiencing high rates of positivity, which is all around us, it's not advised. And it's about staying out. Even, you know, even if you're driving, you're still going to stop and get gas or run into a restroom. That just increases your exposure again. And the high positivity rate is all around us. So I would even just say, you know, not to advise any travel at this time.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? All right, Supervisor of Assessments.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I've got board review filings this year. We've only got 270 this year. It's about half of what we had last year. So they've began looking at the ones that requested not to appear. I have 145 of those. And then the in-person hearings will begin on November 30th. And run through December 14th, and I've got 125 of those. So if all goes as planned, we'll be done with the last hearing on December 14th, and then there'll be any cleanup. So hopefully before Christmas, we'll be done with our season.
When you say in-person hearings, how is that working with our new, you know,
We've got the room set up so we can have the proper spacing and such and that. So
how many people are a part of that whole?
There'd probably be six at a time, I would imagine. Okay. There's three board members, myself. Some of the assessors are coming, some of them are not, and then the appellant. So we've got it's all set up in there, so we'll be okay.
Is there a reason that they just their preference was to meet in person as opposed to?
Well, they don't want to feel like they're not giving people the opportunity to become and be heard.
Okay.
and to, you know, express their concerns about what their assessment is. That was essentially what the basis was.
But obviously they were given the choice to.
Yeah, and actually on the there was a disclaimer that we had on the form that said that they were highly recommending that you don't come in for a hearing, but if you wanted to, I mean, they're not going to tell you no. So
why do you think that it's half this year than it was?
Well, if you look at what the real estate market is looking like, mm-hmm. and what things are selling for, it's substantially more than what anything is assessed for at this point. So
really?
I'm thinking a lot of that has to do with the reasoning that there aren't as many.
Okay, great. Anyone have any questions? All right. Do we have Roger? Thank you, Andy.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Roger, are you on the line? Do you have a report for EMA? He's not on, Scott.
I can see him. Roger, there, you're muted if you're on.
Yeah, sorry, I was just struggling to find the mute button. Excuse me.
Okay, Roger, do you have any kind of report or anything that's happening with
your... Well, it's kind of a repeat of what Ray Ann was talking about. You know, COVID is the prominent subject here in the Emergency Management Agency. The State Emergency Operations Center has reopened for this second wave of COVID, and they're staffing daily virtually. I'm turning in sit reps situation reports to the state daily, which they don't change. I mean, we're telling them the same thing every day. I'm sending out sit reps to us here locally twice a week. I've got plenty of PPE for everyone, but I'm probably going to be ordering some more from the state, which they are now giving us for free again. So I'm probably going to be ordering some more next week. My number of requests that I get have ramped up. I've gotten requests from court services over at the courthouse, from the sheriff's department, from the jail, from the schools. It's not a flood yet, but it's more than I was getting a couple weeks ago. Any other questions? That's about all there is to it, is distribution of PPE and just watching the numbers.
With our last, was it a derecho, or did we actually have, as far as our weather situation from last week?
Oh, I'm sorry, back on the 10th. I thought it was interesting that the severe weather in November occurred on the 10th, just like the severe weather in October occurred on the 10th. I don't know what that means. I'm sure it's nothing. Yes, there was a number of cells in that squall line that came across the Midwest, which reached from St. Louis all the way up into Wisconsin. And there was a couple of EF0 tornadoes popped up in counties that are out west of us. There was some extensive damage out west of us as well, several counties away because of straight line winds. And a tornado warning got as close as the border, the western border of Kendall County with LaSalle. But there wasn't anything actually seen. It was all radar indicated rotation, and there were no tornadoes in Kendall County, nor were there any tornado warnings or watches.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Vickers.
Thank you, Roger. In regards to the PPE for schools, is that N95s or just regular surgical type masks? What sort of stuff are they asking for and getting from us?
Face shields.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The Illinois Emergency Management Agency provided ample PPE for students, staff, and administration probably a month and a half or 2 months ago. Before that, I was getting various small requests for PPE, mostly from Newark and Lisbon. And I think also Plano once. But recently, I guess it was about 3 weeks ago, that I was, it was Newark requested about 200 face shields, because the kids that are in speech class and, you know, that sort of thing, they don't want the mask on their face.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyone else? No more questions? All right. Standing committee reports. Admin HR, is that Liz?
Yes.
Go ahead, Liz.
We have, sorry, I'm trying to get to that part of the agenda. Thanks. Here. We have the approval of Assistant Director of Facilities Management Project Manager job description. We have a motion to approve that.
Are you making that motion?
Second.
Is that Mr. Gengler?
Right.
Seconded by Mr. Kreider. Okay. Any questions or comments on this? Mr. Keppel, do we have anything on this?
The job description came out of committee with a request for legal review. It was sent, Leslie sent the review back to Jim. We've adopted recommendations from the state's attorney's office and added them to the job description. That's the version and the only changes that came since it was last discussed at committee.
Robin, is your hand up to discuss this or?
No, sorry, I forgot to put it down again.
Okay. Anyone else have any questions? All right, roll call, please.
Mr. Gengler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sesich?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
All right, Highway, Mr. Greider.
Thank you. And Scott, I can't see the agenda.
Yeah, scroll.
Here right now. So could I, Amy, could I ask you to read the motion as,
sure,
as my vice on that?
Sorry about that. We scrolled it up on the screen for you if you can see it. But I can do it as well. All right, can we get a motion to approve resolution renaming parts of West High Point Road and Fox Road to Eldemain Road?
So moved.
Motion by Hendricks, seconded by Prochaska.
I'll second. Or go ahead, Matt. And Fran, I know Fran's on the line. Do you want to talk about the efforts that we took and why this makes sense?
Yeah. How's my audio? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
So the committee had looked at renaming Eldemain Road and where that change should occur between Lisbon Road and Eldemain Road, and this was essentially what came out of that discussion, that Eldemain, the road would be named Eldemain north of 71 and all the way up to Galena Road, and then everything south of 71 would be named Lisbon Road. So this action would rename those parts of Fox Road and West High Point Road to Eldemain Road, but not until the completion of the construction. So that'll probably be a couple years out yet.
And Fran, I know you had sent out sort of notification. Did we get anybody asking questions or anybody opposing that name change?
Just one. Had one concerned citizen who's actually a new resident who had just bought a place there like a year or two ago. And so we're working through that, and he's aware of it, but it's a big change, trying to change all of your bank accounts and driver's license and all those things. So we know it's a big deal for the people who live out there, but that was actually we only had one person who gave us any feedback.
Okay, thank you. Any comments, questions from anyone else? All right, seeing none, may I get a roll call, please?
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sesich?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gengler?
Yes.
Okay, all ayes. Thank you. May I get a motion to approve the local public agency agreement for federal participation between State of Illinois Department of Transportation and Kendall County for Eldemain Road, Contract B Construction. Motion by Mr. Kellogg, second by Mr. Prochaska. Any discussion, questions?
Yeah, Fran? And this is another one that Fran, can you just kind of take us through what this means as well?
Sure. So anytime you have any federal money in a project, you have to have a local agency agreement for federal participation, hence this action item. So there's only $2 million of federal money in this project, but it really doesn't matter if there's $1 in it. You have to have this agreement. So the state, Illinois Department of Transportation, prepares the agreement. It defines how much money and how it's going to be split up between the county and the state, and that agreement then is signed, and it becomes a part of the record to move forward with the project. In this particular case, for Eldemain Road Contract B, there's $30 million of Rebuild Illinois money, $2 million of federal STR money, and then the balance would be local funds. Now, we anticipated a lot greater share of local funds, but the bid came in extremely low, and so our part of local funds will probably only be in the approximately $3 million instead of $13 million, which you'll see in the next action item. We actually are approving $13 million of local money. That will not be used, but it has to coincide with this agreement that we have with the state. And that agreement was based on the original engineer's estimate. So, I mean, that gets a little complicated, but it's all good news. The job's $10 million under the estimate, and this agreement defines all of that, and our local share will wind up being only about $3 million.
Mr. Keppel.
Fran, you originally anticipated that we may need to bond for the local share. With the new amount that came in on the bid, do you still anticipate that?
I do not. Because we're getting this little bit greater share in motor fuel taxes now through the Rebuild Illinois bond funds, we're going to take those local monies, throw it at this project, and between the state money, the federal money, and this Rebuild Illinois bond funds, which are like MFT funds, we will not need to do a bond issue at all for this project.
So, I mean, that's important to note and say again that our portion, Fran, is going to be around $3 million as opposed to $10 million?
Yeah, I mean, originally, if the estimate was $45 million. Now, we expected it would come in a little less than that, so we anticipated a bond issue of $10 or $12 million, perhaps. This came in so low that there's no need for a bond issue at all.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else?
Well, yeah, and just to drive that point home, this is really huge for Kendall County, and it's one of those things that we've planned for years. And when they did the Rebuild Illinois program, they were looking for shovel ready quote unquote projects, and because of all the work that we had done over the years, for this and to have it ready. This truly is and was a shovel-ready project, you see now the benefit of having been ready to go the way we were. Not only were we able to save some money, significant money, by going out to bid when we did, we're going to be ready to go to start construction on this very soon. So, it's really good for the county, the way this has turned out.
Yeah, I will echo that sentiment as well. It's really, I know we kind of feel a little stoic right now, but this is really an exciting thing. I've been in this county 15 years. I know most of the people in this room have been in here almost their whole lives, or probably their whole lives. And to finally see this coming to fruition is, I'm sure as exciting as it is for me that's been here for 15. You all that have been born and raised out here probably just thought it would never happen. So, Fran, thank you for your work on this and, all of the things that everybody did to make this happen. It's really a great thing. So, any more comments, questions? Roll call, please, Debbie.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg? Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sessage?
Yes.
Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler? Ms. Gilmore?
Yes. Passes, thank you. May I get a motion to approve the resolution appropriating funds for the improvement of El Domain Road, Contract B?
Second.
So moved.
I'll make that motion, and Mr. Kellogg is seconding that. Any discussion, Fran? Just the resolution?
Yeah, just reiterating, this action item goes hand in hand with the previous action item, and in fact, this appropriation resolution is an exhibit on the previous action item, the local agency agreement. It says we're appropriating $13 million. You know, that is worst case scenario based on the original estimate. We will not spend $13 million, but that is what we have to pass now to go hand in hand with the previous exhibit. But our local share for the contract itself is going to be somewhere around $3 million is all.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Mr. Greider, any other thoughts on this?
I don't think so. I think we've kind of covered it.
Okay. Debbie, roll call, please.
Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sessage?
Yes.
Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Motion passes. Thank you. May I get a motion to approve the 2020-2040 long-range transportation plan? Motion by Mr. Prochaska, second by Kellogg. Any questions on this? We have to do this yearly, Fran?
We do. Because we have a transportation sales tax, the state law requires us to have a long-range transportation plan. I mean, obviously, a long-range transportation plan is a good idea anyway, but because of our population, we wouldn't otherwise have to have one, but because of the transportation sales tax, we are required to have a long-range plan, and we have to do an annual update. So we've done a 20-year plan, and then each year we tweak it to make sure the numbers are all correct, and we pass this annual update just to keep us in compliance with state law.
Okay. So obviously the biggest change is the El Domain.
Correct.
Yeah.
And this draft plan has been on the county's website for a couple weeks now, just so people could take a look at it if they wanted to. But it's substantially similar to what it's been in previous years. Obviously, El Domain Road is the biggest thing in there.
Great. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Roll call, please.
Kellogg?
Yes.
Jessica?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Message?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Passes. Facilities, Mr. Kellogg.
We can't hear Mr. Kellogg.
Like to make a motion to approve a 5-year advanced service agreement with MetroNet for IP telephone services in an amount not to exceed $7,000 per month.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Kellogg, seconded by Mr. Prochaska. Mr. Kellogg, do we have anything, or Mr. Keppel? Was that was just what was given to us?
Yeah, Jim passed out to everybody that's present in an agenda memo, and that also was emailed yesterday to the entire board. This would be switching us from our current antiquated phone system to a IP telephony system using MetroNet as the service provider. This is a 5-year agreement, and we would be bringing in new telephone sets, but we're not buying them. This is all leased and paid annually, and will come in less in cost than we pay for our current antiquated phone system. So it's exciting that we can reduce costs and bring this in. There's been a lot of work put in by Jim and technology to get us up to having proper wiring and switches in place to do this. We had a lot of interest in the bid. MetroNet was the lowest price. And then there was considerable work back and forth with the state's attorney's office and Jim to get this in as best shape as we possibly could contract-wise.
Balog, do you have anything to add? I know when we talked about this at committee level, you know, there was a lot of questions and ideas, and the cost savings was pretty substantial. So I don't know how all that works, and I'm just glad you all do. So, and it's good, you know, obviously for the residents of this county that they know that we are always trying to look at new ways of spending our money better. Ms. Flowers.
I'm really supportive of this because the leased equipment will allow us to continue to upgrade, and the cost savings are really substantial. So this is a great idea.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Yeah, Chairman Vicker. Sorry, Chairman Sessage.
Yes, Mr. Gangler.
You know, I'm a huge fan of this, saving about $56,000 to update our system. Huge fan. So congrats. Good work.
Thank you. Okay. Anyone else? All right. Seeing none. Roll call, please.
Jaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sessage?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion passes. Planning, Building, and Zoning, Mr. Prochaska.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to make a motion for the approval of a petition 2021 request from the Kendall County Planning, Building, and Zoning Committee to repeal and replace the Kendall County Recreational Vehicle Park and Campground Zoning Regulations and repealing the 1983 Vehicle Park and Campground Regulations.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Prochaska, seconded by Mr. Kellogg. Any questions, comments we want to speak about? I know we talked about this at Cal, so if there's any other questions, please ask now. Seeing none, roll call, please.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sessage?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Jaska?
Yes.
Motion passes. Thank you. Special committee reports. Mr. Prochaska?
Madam Chairman, the United Counties Council will be having its online meeting via Zoom this upcoming Monday. If anyone is interested in attending, please let me know and we'll make sure you get the login information. ISACO is not going to be having its annual meeting this year as originally planned, and NACO is postponing its fall board meeting and rural action meeting.
Okay, anything else? Mr. Keppel?
I just wanted to note that I am representing the county on the Regional Economic Recovery Task Force that involves the city of Chicago. It's a CMAP is putting it together. So it's all the CMAP counties, including Kendall County and the city of Chicago. We had our first, our kickoff meeting, and there was a big plan that came out of Chicago and World Business Chicago that we discussed a little bit, and we're broken down into some working groups. And, you know, it's exciting to see the region trying to work together to, you know, get us out of the financial issues that have come because of COVID. So just want to report back. I'll be bringing more information as we progress with this.
Excellent. Thank you. Anyone else? Other business. Chairman's report. Mr. Greider, do you have anything?
Nothing additional. I was going to mention what Mr. Keppel just said. I was on that call as well. And, you know, we're continuing to look for ways to work together as a region and you know, continue that collaboration. But that's it. And thank you. Thank you for what you're doing today, Amy.
Oh, thank you. All right. Any public comments?
Amy?
Yes.
I still wanted to note there's the plan is to have a November 30th special county board meeting.
Yes.
To do the final bills of the year and clean up anything, and then also do some congratulations and thank yous. So I'm not positive what the availability will be of the room and how many people can be in a meeting. And then the reorganization meeting will be on December 7th per state law. That's the first Monday, the month after the election. It's a little bit odd that it's all the way to the 7th, but that will be happening as well, and more information to come just because of the rules. We're still in phase one mitigations, but if we're in phase two, we're limited to 10 people, so that may affect what we can do, but we'll have a good plan and figure it out.
Okay. Do you anticipate that changing to remote only, or are you just trying to preemptively plan?
Just thinking through it and seeing where the state takes us and what happens. So it maybe not remote only, but we may have to move people around or have the swearing in, you know, and then have a break and then try to do the reorg if, you know, whoever needs to be remote. So
okay.
Just trying to plan out what we'll be able to do and have some different options.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, that, you know, just thinking about sort of the changeover in board, you know, it's always been sort of this, you know, ceremoniously, you know, event. So it will be really different this year. So I know that you have a lot of challenges coming ahead. All right, public comment. I see nothing in the room or on the call. Questions from the press?
Can I ask a question?
Yes. Is it Mr. Wyman?
Yes, Jim Wyman, WSBY. Is the Chairman Grider ill, and if so, is he ill with COVID?
I'm sorry, is your question directed to the Chairman, Mr. Grider?
Yes, it is.
I'm sorry, repeat your question, because we just couldn't hear you.
I just wondered if Chairman Grider was ill, and if so, he tested positive for COVID.
Hey, Jim, I'm taking precautions. That's all.
Oh, okay. Thank you. It's in regards to why you weren't here. Yeah, I think if Breanne is still on here, I should have probably asked. Typically, when you get tested, whether you know for sure or whatever, I think they give you a quarantine time or at least a isolate until you get your results, especially if you're having symptoms. But even when you are not, they suggest that just until you get your results. So if she's on the line, if she wants to correct that statement, that's fine. So I think that I think people are just being cautious at this point. Make sure you're safe. Anything else?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Kellogg.
I'm sorry, Mr. Kellogg and Mr. Prochaska seconded it.
Ms. Sesich?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Grider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Jessica?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
All right, we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody. We have...